Welcome to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast.
Coming up today, you'll hear from hitting coach Derek Shelton as he works with hitters new and old at Tropicana Field. We'll visit with Kurt Casale on his pursuit of making the opening day roster, plus much more.
This is Rays Radio. Now here's your host, Neil Solons.
Thanks for joining us this Tuesday, February 10th. We're now less than 2 weeks away from the start of spring training. There were no player moves over the past week, but several individuals have been working out at Tropicana Field, so let's start there.
It's time to go inside the operating room and take a look at Rays baseball operations.
We continue our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast, and with us, Rays hitting coach Derek Shelton. Shelty, hard to believe we're less than really 2 weeks from the start of spring training, but you've been here for quite a while during the course of the winter. What's your take on what's taking place this offseason?
Well, I think we're excited. You know, this time of the year we got guys in town, which is nice. We have a bunch of guys that live here so that we're able to get some work done. But I'm really excited going into the season. You know, I know there's been a bunch of change, but I think we're on the right track, and we're ready to get to spring training and see how it goes.
What excites you the most this time of year? Obviously, the Rays have acquired some new players. I'm sure you've watched a ton of video on some of those guys. Watching that video and learning about guys, what excites you?
Well, yeah, I mean, specifically starting off with Souza, just the way the ball comes off his bat, just not only from watching the video, but from the people I'm talking to. You know, it sounds like and looks like the ball really comes off hot. So that excites me. I'm excited for Longo to build off what he did in the second half of the season and seeing what he's done with his swing.
That's hitting coach Derek Shelton, who not only likes what he's seen of video from Evan Longoria, but also the work Desmond Jennings has been doing at Tropicana Field and that of Tim Beckham to work back from missing most of last year following an ACL injury that cost him the majority of the 2014 schedule. Now, Derek is familiar with his Drubal Cabrera since he was the hitting coach in Cleveland when Cabrera began his major league career. Shelton likes that Cabrera is a switch hitter who's had equal big league success on both sides of the plate.
And plays in the middle of the diamond. Those guys are rare. So, you know, great kid, works hard. He's not a kid anymore, but I'm excited for him to be added into our core mix in what he's going to bring, and I think he's really going to be a nice addition.
I was curious what kind of things you can do in spring training with a hitter and also this time, because there are guys who may have had a tough year last year or things you want to change. Can you change more with a swing now than you can with adjustments during the regular season because you're not yet facing live pitching or you're not quite at game speed or you can do the extra reps to get there?
Well, 100%. You know, during the season, it's hard to make adjustments because of the fact that not only are we at game speed, but it's also affecting the number that goes up on the board, which plays a psychological factor for hitters. This time of the year, we can take the things we've seen last year. We can work on things that we think going forward are going to help guys get better. And then in spring training, we can actually work on those things a little bit more and make them consistent. Because in spring training, you know, we're going to have days where we work on certain specific things for our bats. And it's not going to be something that will be known, you know, publicly or we're going to talk about, but it'll be a specific focus. So this is the time of the year we can get a lot of stuff done.
And I know that Kevin has talked about the importance of being in Tampa Bay, similar to Arizona, where you get the chance to work with guys maybe a little more frequently than some other teams before spring training starts. In your mind, how big an advantage can that be?
I think it's definitely an advantage, and I think if you see the guys that live here and are out here on a daily basis and the fact that, you know, we have a dome, so we're able to hit regardless of conditions, but it's good. And the guys that aren't here, you know, specifically, we talk to them, we watch a video of them, you know, guys send me videos from where they're hitting at just so we know, but it's a definite advantage to have guys out here, and it's a definite advantage, especially this off season with the fact that you have a new manager, you have, you know, essentially a new general manager, although Matt was here, but, you know, he wasn't in that role. And so the fact that they're able to be out and be around and kind of take steps going ahead, so the first day, specifically for Kevin, that he stands in front of a lot of these guys, it's not the first day they've met him. I mean, he's starting to develop relationships already.
And we touched on a lot of the guys who are new, but one guy who's new but old is John Jaso. How different a hitter is he now than he was when you had him? I know that he's going to spend most of his time hitting versus catching now too.
Right. Well, Johnny can hit, and, you know, he could hit when he was here the first time, and he's very versatile in terms of what you can do with him in a lineup. I mean, he's one of those rare guys that was a catcher, now is a DH, that you can hit in the one spot or you can move to the middle of the order. You know, the one thing I told Johnny when he came back is we lost Zoe, who had 1,500 stances, and we get Johnny, who comes back, who has about 1,500 stances. So the one great thing about John Jaso is the fact that he really knows himself as a hitter. He understands how his swing works. He understands how to command the strike zone. He commands the strike zone against right-handed pitching, you know, probably in the top 10 guys in the game. So those kind of things and the fact that he is more veteran, has more experience, is a good thing for us.
Well, best of luck as you get ready for spring training. Thanks for a few minutes.
Thanks, Neil. I'm excited about getting ready to go.
That's Rays hitting coach Derek Shelton. Now, one of the things we didn't touch on much is the hitting abilities of the Rays catchers. Now, the lone player who saw time last year that's back this season with the Rays is rookie Kurt Casale.
We continue our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast, and now joining us, Kurt Casale. Kurt, welcome back to Tampa Bay. What kind of offseason was it for you?
It was a fun offseason. I spent the majority of it in Nashville, Tennessee, with a bunch of my former Vanderbilt players, so the likes of David Price, Sonny Gray, Pedro Alvarez, some pretty big names in the sport that we've kind of created a little fraternity at Vanderbilt University. It's almost like I never left college, so it was a good offseason, but definitely excited to be back in Tampa.
Being out there, obviously, you can keep in touch with what's going on here. So how did you perceive the offseason as it evolved from the outside?
Well, I definitely felt more involved this offseason just based on, you know, being in the big leagues for a little bit last year. So that whole dynamic was a little bit interesting, and clearly it was a, you know, an interesting offseason because we lost the manager, GM, a bunch of former teammates of mine have now moved on to different clubs. But at the same time, it presents another opportunity for a lot of the guys, younger guys in our organization, myself being included in that conversation. And I'm really looking forward to the next step. Gotten a chance to talk with Kevin Cash a little bit already. Seems like he is fired up to go, and he's going to bring a winning attitude to the team.
You mentioned opportunity, and last year you got your first big league opportunity. Yeah. So what did you learn from that, and how did it help you start to get ready?
I learned a lot, honestly, just because I think I got a lot of playing time that, you know, maybe I wasn't expecting to get. I got to pick the brain of two, you know, former veteran catchers in baseball between Hannigan and Molina. And you know, mainly just going about my business in the right way. I think the game is still the same as you know, what I've been playing over the past couple of years. Obviously, the competition's a lot better. But, you know, when you strap it up and get in between those lines, it's still baseball. But just like little things like how to talk to pitchers, you know, what to look for in certain counts, and, you know, a lot of reverse psychology that I've come to know. But it was fun. I learned a lot from those guys last year, and hopefully I can take it into this year and improve on what I built up.
Obviously, a lot of what a catcher does is defensively oriented and team oriented. But I remember meeting you. You were known as more of an offensive catcher coming into last year. Yet in AAA and more so the big leagues, your offensive numbers were probably not what you would have anticipated. What did you work on with your swing so far in the offseason?
I worked on simplifying it a lot. I think I was thinking about way too much last year. Just being in the big leagues for the first time, I was a little overwhelmed for sure, for good reason. But I talked to Derek Shelton a lot this offseason. I talked to Jamie Nelson, and we figured out something that I like. And I hit today. I felt really good. I'm trying to shorten my swing as much as possible and put myself in advantage counts and, you know, not be passive at the plate. You got to be aggressive if you want to hit well in this league, because you may only get one pitch to hit per at bat, if that. So you got to take advantage of what the pitcher gives you, and I think I can do that this year.
You mentioned all the moves that the team made. One was changing the veteran catchers, but they also got an experienced guy in Rene Rivera. He's not here now. I know he's been playing winter ball a lot, but Bobby Wilson is here, a local guy who has some experience. Have you got to meet him, and what have the two of you shared?
Bobby seems like a really good guy. I've only met him 3 days ago, so we've conversed a little bit, but we've talked just based on past experiences and funny things that have happened to us, you know, in past seasons. But he seems like a great guy. I'm going to really enjoy competing with him this spring for whatever job is available. You know, hopefully it's one of the big league jobs, and it'll be a battle between the two of us. But like I said, I'm a competitive guy. I know he is too, because, you know, that's our goal, to be a big league catcher. And, you know, we're both chomping at the bit to try and get that opportunity. I'm looking forward to it.
beyond obviously shortening your swing and helping that with your offensive approach, what are the other things you want to improve on in what you hope is your first full season in the majors?
I want to really work on my rapport with the pitching staff too. I think we built something pretty good last year just based on how we performed when I got here and the pitcher's comfort level, and that's pretty much a catcher's job, is to make the guy on the mound feel as comfortable as possible. And if I can do that with our starters, Cobb, Archer, Smiley, Odo, and whoever else is out there, and Maddie when he gets back, it'll be really, really fun. And I'm just looking forward to that next step in my progression as a professional and as a big league catcher.
Best of luck. Look forward to seeing you in Port Charlotte.
Thanks so much.
That's Rays catcher Kurt Casale, likely to compete with Bobby Wilson in camp for the opportunity to join Rene Rivera as catchers on the opening day roster. Now, catching is one area where there's competition going into spring training, and we'll be following those competitions throughout spring training with the first workout on February 23rd. Meanwhile, several Rays players have been hard at work in the community as well as on the playing field, giving area T-ball players a chance to wear the Rays jersey throughout Tampa Bay.
Time to check out the Community Corner and see what the Rays are doing in the community.
We continue our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. Now joining us, Senior Vice President of the Rays, Mark Fernandez. Mark, the Rays again are very much involved with Majestic and the T-ball community throughout Tampa Bay. Let our fans know a little bit about this program, how it began, and now how it's grown in its second year.
This is the second year, Neil, and it's in a 7-county area covering 50-plus little leagues. And in simplest description, the goal was to have every T-ball team in Tampa Bay be the Rays. Our partners at Majestic Athletic helped us design 18 different uniform T-shirt combinations with 3 different versions of the Rays logo. There's a camo and a flag and the regular and a bunch of different base colors. And so what you have now is every T-ball team is the Rays in some form. And it was really born of parents saying to us and kids, we want our team to be the Rays, and kids and parents being disappointed when their team got stuck being somebody other than the Rays.
So now they're able to wear the Rays colors and the Rays jerseys and do it in so many different ways during the course of a T-ball season. What's the feedback been so far?
It's been overwhelmingly positive. I mean, not only is it exciting for us to see that Rays brand active, but these parents and these kids are the next generation of fan. You hear a lot about, gosh, people weren't born here, and so maybe they bring some other affiliation. And that's true a little bit, but we've seen that tide really turn over the last couple of years. And maybe most importantly, this investment, we provide all of this at no charge, of course, as well as hats and uniforms for the coaches. It's helped these leagues in combination realize a savings in excess of $100,000. And that money can go into field renovations. It can go into equipment. And so it's really a perfect storm of not only building fans, but also helping deliver a significant economic impact to these leagues.
Again, Mark Fernandez with us on our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. Mark, Senior Vice President for the Rays. We're talking about the T-ball program, which obviously allows these leagues to reinvest or reallocate their resources in other areas that they normally couldn't. But it's more than that, right? Over the weekend, you had a couple hundred coaches participate in a clinic. So the Rays are providing resources in that way, too, so that these kids are going to get better coaching.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, our community philosophy is not just to write a check. That's the easy part. We talk about that a lot. It's how can we find ways to be hands-on and have active partnerships? So the Positive Coaching Alliance, which really is about helping these volunteer parents do a better job of being how to be parent leaders, right? These are folks who want to be coaches, but maybe they don't know how to keep that messaging positive, have the engagement with the kids and other parents, have a positive outcome. Matt Silverman, who's our president of baseball operations, actually chairs the Positive Coaching Alliance board here in Tampa Bay. And so we've grown that relationship significantly, and they were a great addition this weekend.
They were. And in addition to them participating, you had Al Herbeck, who does these clinics all around the country, leading these volunteers through various coaching exercises. And you had player involvement, too, and manager Kevin Cash, who, of course, came from the Little League in Tampa and went to the Little League World Series. And among the players was also Bobby Wilson, who played Little League
baseball in Seminole. So you really had a strong local tie during the course of the past weekend.
That's exactly right. And that was exciting. I mean, the Positive Coaching Alliance is one piece. Al Herbeck, who you mentioned, is a renowned coach for and a coach trainer all over the country. I know as a parent who would volunteer, and then it'd become the first day for practice, and I think, I don't know how to organize this. I don't know how to help these kids in the best possible way, and Al helps with that. And then having Kevin here on top of it, you're right. Kevin was part of the Northside Little League team that actually went to the Little League World Series. And, of course, Bobby, and then we had Jake Odorizzi out here. We had Grant Balfour out here. And we're so proud of our guys as parents themselves, our young men who want to be role models. So it was really a terrific weekend all the way around, helping the kids be better, helping the parents who are volunteering be better, and giving those uniforms out. Those are the kind of weekends that we all love.
And I guess the big question now is, with the program so successful the first 2 years, if our fans are wondering, okay, my T-ball got to wear Rays jerseys. Is my little leaguer going to be able to do that in the future? Are we far from the program even growing?
We hope so. Little League Baseball is so popular here, and so many kids are playing it, which is incredibly exciting. You know, we talk a lot about the fact that more big leaguers have come out of Tampa Bay than any place else in the country, and both baseball and softball is so big here. So we welcome the opportunity to grow this program beyond T-ball into the minors and majors and beyond. And these first couple of years with T-ball have been a great first step in helping us figure out how we can best be of service to Little League Baseball. And our goal long term is to not just keep the T-ball program alive, but something much bigger.
Mark, thanks for a few minutes. Good stuff.
Thank you.
That's Rays Senior Vice President Mark Fernandez on the T-ball program, which gives thousands of area children the chance to wear the Rays jersey and save those leagues more than $115,000. With the season now less than 2 weeks away, let's take a deeper look.
Time now to head up to the press box.
We continue our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast, and spring training may start for the pitchers and catchers shortly, but it's already begun for my friend Andy Fried with the Countdown to Opening Day show, already one of the books, and another one coming up this Thursday. Andy, thanks for being with us.
Of course, and it's begun for all of us, and thank goodness.
Exactly. Hey, what were your takeaways from the first program? For those who missed it, and it is available on podcast now, Kevin Cash and Alex Cobb were the first guests.
Well, I think with Kevin, you know, there was so much of the off season that was, we were all kind of dwelling on what we lost, you know, with Joe not here and Andrew not here and Ben Zobrist not here and what this team didn't have. I think when you talk to Kevin, you get a sense of it being not only a salve on the wound, but okay, let's break through the shock of all the changes, and let's keep moving this franchise forward here. This is a new era. This is an exciting thing. You know, the managers and GMs don't tend to last as long as Joe and Andrew did, especially together anyway. I mean, longest one running in baseball until it ended. So inevitably that happened. The Rays are in much better shape than most other teams with regard to continuity. And so now we turn the page, and I don't know, I feel optimistic talking to Kevin. You know, as we know, he's the youngest manager or coach in any of the four major sports, younger than most of the college ones, too, I would think. And with that, I think you will get ceaseless and endless energy, and I think he has been so strong in moving forward here that when you talk to him, and it doesn't come off as phony, it comes off as genuine, I think you get a real sense of, okay, the shock is over. Let's get this going. I cannot wait to get down and smell the leather and hear the crack of the bat. And I think it makes me feel very optimistic moving forward for the next chapter of this franchise. In terms of Alex Cobb, I mean, I see a guy that so naturally moves into that role of leader without having to say he's a leader. You know, I felt that, you know, with James Shields, when he was here, he kind of took that over from Scott Kazmir because he ended up being better during that period of time and kind of outworked him, I think. With David Price, I felt like it was a little more artificial in a sense. Like, okay, everyone looked to David, and David's saying, I need to do more than I probably can. With Alex, it seems to be a little more seamless. And his answers the other day on our Countdown to Opening Day show about how he doesn't think that there's even one leader. He thinks it's a staff of leaders with he and Archer and Odorizzi and on and on, Drew Smiley, too. So I get a sense of real optimism for changing of the guard. And look, you know, a lot of people are thinking that this Rays team might be about a 500 team, and if so, I'd take my chances because I think they could actually do a lot better than that and win this division.
Interesting stuff. I think two takeaways for me from Kevin, just his self-deprecating sense of humor and just the genuineness of Alex Cobb were probably the things that stuck out as I listened to them.
Yes, and I think the thing that really jumped out when we were talking to Alex is how he felt very empowered as a player. And let's face it, like any employee, if your boss doesn't listen to you, you feel like, well, you know, whatever. It's just a job. But when they do listen to you in any line of work, and clearly Matt Silverman and the new crew upstairs really took into account what the players were saying about what needed to change. And I think at each point, you see that they felt like they were heard. And I think when that happens, you've already put into motion that sense of cohesiveness that any good team tends to have. And I think there is some cohesiveness to this team even before we all get down to Port Charlotte.
Your upcoming guests are Matt Silverman and Evan Longoria. So what are you most looking forward to hearing from them on the next show on Thursday?
Well, I mean, we've talked to Alex, and we've heard from John Jaso, and we've heard from Grant Balfour, but we really haven't heard a lot vocally from Evan yet. Evan's a pretty busy guy, you know, he hasn't really been on the record much this offseason, a little bit through Twitter, but I'm anxious to hear his thoughts on everything. You know, ultimately, he comes back to, if you're going to rank, who are the most important players to the individual teams in the American League East, Evan's at the top of the list. I mean, Evan's invaluable. You can't take him away from this team and expect to be good. So I think ultimately it ends up being, where does Evan hit? Who hits behind Evan? Who can set up Evan? You know, he's pretty important. And I think that we'd like to see a bounce back year in the respect of, it's not like it was a rotten year, but it wasn't quite to his level. And he says that. He has said that, was saying it last year. So, you know, he's the linchpin guy on this team. And in terms of Matt, I mean, where do we start? I mean, there's so much to go over from this offseason and moving forward. You know, we've had the offseason where it's all happened, you know, on paper and transaction-wise. Now it's time to move it forward. And I'm curious, too, what his concerns are moving forward for this team also, because I think it's a team like every other team in the division. It has flaws.
And I would agree with that. I think the offseason, who knows whether it's truly done since, you know, we still have spring training to get to through before opening day. The Padres show they're not done by signing James Shields. You mentioned Shields when you talked about Cobb. Are you surprised at where he landed? And are you all surprised he got probably a lot less than we all thought he might when the offseason began?
Well, he's a victim of his own success, as durable as he's been and his age that he is right now. I think there are some GMs that were a little nervous to give him Lester money or Scherzer money. Not that he would have necessarily gotten that anyway, but probably closer to that range of it because he has logged so many innings. I was surprised when I saw the comparison of innings from Shields compared to Scherzer, how many fewer Scherzer in terms of pitches even that he's thrown. You know, Shields is a guy you can really build a rotation around. I think it's a perfect fit. I mean, I'm curious because the Padres could use a guy like him, and he could use a team like the Padres. I mean, he's been with teams that have turned it around. He did it with the Rays, and he did it with the Royals, and he was the centerpiece of the rotation of each time. I'll always say that James Shields was the most important player, the most important pitcher in Rays history, and I would give him the edge over Price, only because James had to carve out the whole niche that, he couldn't inherit anything from anybody. He had to do it as a young player. So I always will root for James Shields. I hated when we would play against him. It always felt very awkward to me, very uncomfortable, because we like him personally, and I know how important he was to this franchise. We all do. So, you know, I think, you know, I'm not going to cry a river over the money because he's going to be just fine. And I am curious, though, how important it was to him to go to a California team. We kept hearing that, but I didn't know if that was just supposition on the part of writers or if it was really true. And I'm also curious how close he might have come to the Marlins, and that would have been an interesting fit. But I think the Padres, Southern California, where they are in their maturation, where he is in his maturation, I think they're a perfect fit.
Knowing how he is, and you know how determined he is to prove people wrong and what an individual he is as a leader, do you think people are overestimating the pitches thrown based on how he keeps his body in shape, and are they underestimating his value as a leader? Because I would have thought that, and I'm happy he's not pitching for Boston, but I thought he would have been a perfect fit for their staff.
I would have detested having to see him six times a year in a Boston uniform. That would have been almost too much to stomach. In fact, it might have been too much December. But, yeah, I think they would have been a very good fit. I thought at some point, some way, they were going to get him, or maybe they'll still get Hamels. They with the unlimited funds, they can pretty much think of signing guys like that long term. But, you know, it does seem to me, you know, if they weren't going to do it for Lester, and he's slightly younger than Shields, then maybe they weren't going to do it for James. I mean, there really does seem to be that trend of, because of so much emphasis placed on innings pitches and pitches thrown now, that teams want to skew a little bit younger and try to get that pitcher before he has that seemingly inevitable arm injury let down. Where I was surprised with Shields last year is that he really didn't pitch great in the postseason, because he's a guy I would have wanted to have on the mound if I were the Kansas City Royals, and he had his moments, but he wasn't overwhelming. He had his bad moments, too. That being said, I don't know. Maybe that scared teams off, maybe not. But, yeah, he keeps himself in great physical shape. And, look, ultimately, I think a lot of this comes down to biology. You know, which guys are more susceptible to a Tommy John situation or your shoulder blowing out? Nobody really knows. I mean, I think there are plenty of theories on it, but it sure looks to me like teams are skewing younger. The twist in that is that sometimes the younger guys may be more susceptible anyway. So I think teams are trying to hedge their bets on who they hitch their wagon to with regard to the tens and sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars they're going to spend. But ultimately, it is kind of a crapshoot. You don't know what's going to happen. They just try to play the odds, as they do in this sabermetric era anyway.
Interesting stuff indeed, and we'll be keeping a close eye on it. Andy, thanks for a few minutes, and we look forward to the next Countdown to Opening Day show.
Of course. We'll all be there.
That's one of the voices of the Rays, Andy Fried, in our From the Press Box segment. Don't forget to tune in this Thursday for the next Countdown to Opening Day show from 7 to 8. Dave and Andy will be joined on 620 WDAE and the Rays Radio Network by Matt Silverman and Evan Longoria, and that show also will be posted on Friday as a podcast if you happen to miss it. Remember, you can continue to read our blog, raysradio.mlblogs.com, and follow us on Twitter at Rays Radio. Thanks for joining us. We'll speak with you soon.
Thank you for listening to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. For more on the Rays this offseason, visit our blog at raysradio.mlblogs.com and follow us on Twitter at Rays Radio.